Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Claire Zai. Claire is a lifter, a coach. She's currently a first-year medical student. And we had a great discussion oriented around training, health, the challenges of medical school, science, all sorts of good topics were discussed. It was a really great conversation. I really appreciate Claire taking the time to come on and talk about life and training and medical school and all sorts of really awesome topics. It was a great conversation. You can find her at Claire_BarbellMedicine on Instagram. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. I certainly did. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you. All right, Claire. So the big reason, there's a lot of reasons I want to have you on, but you're going to medical school now, right? Mm-hmm. You recently posted on just like kind of the change in your lifestyle because you're going into medical school. But take us through, like, what made you want to go to medical school and how freaking hard it's been so far.
Medical school is actually a breeze. I just, wake up, study for a couple hours, and then do whatever I want the rest of the day. Sorry, that was sarcasm. It's a lot more challenging. But my path to medical school started when I was in college, and I knew that I loved science. I knew that I loved helping people. And my path was, okay, I'm going to get into research because I truly love science. And the research that I was had access to was working with amputees in sport and helping them achieve their goals that way. And so from there, I was like, man, watching my PI and seeing that she was not doing research, she was doing grant writing and teaching, and I was like, that's cool, but that's not what I want to be doing. I want to be like with the people, and that's what I enjoyed. And then I moved from that to clinical research, thinking that that would give me a little bit more of what I wanted and what was helpful for me, and that was still not enough time with patients. And so after that, I was like, man, I have to apply to medical school. So I took a couple of years to do that. And so it was this evolution of like, I love science and I love this aspect of it. And there's a lot of things about research that I do love. I'm so sorry if you can hear my cat.
It's okay. Just keep rolling it. It'll be fine.
Oh man, she's so cute, but she's just so annoying sometimes. And so then it ends up that I wanted to be in sports and medicine and be working with people like on the ground and have those one-on-one interactions with them.
So. I gotcha. Do you want to let her out? Will she be quiet?
Yeah, I think I do need to let her out. Because otherwise,
just let her out. I'm going to press pause. Mia? Oh, she's pretty.
She's so cute.
So that's like, because your journey, it's funny. That's like, yeah, like, I hate to be like this, but like, that's a classic like journey of what do I want to do? Like, especially, so actually I'll just throw this in here, like, I actually was working towards medical school. I was working in a hospital. A lot of it was kind of the same. I just started to shadow people, and I realized, like, you know, what made me choose rehab versus medicine was I actually applied, like, I did fine on my MCAT. I only applied to one school and I got waitlisted. I actually got to like number one or two on the waitlist, so like I didn't get in by like the cutoff, right?
Yeah.
And it was actually advantageous because I think, you know, for me, I was influenced by like barbell medicine in a few ways back 10 years ago. It's like, I just want to go and open a gym. Well, it's like, you're going to go to medical school so you can like open a gym. And it's like, is that really the way you should think about this? And like, looking back, I'm like, that would have been really silly. But like, you mentioning the patient contact, like, what is it about that like maybe gets overlooked? Because I do think there's people who go into medicine, like, they don't want to interact with people at all, right? And it's like,
yeah, they go into radiology.
Exactly. And I have a buddy who's a radiologist, super good guy. He's just like, he doesn't want to have bedside manner, right?
That's totally fine. Yeah.
But like, for you, what is it about just humans that you enjoy like navigating?
I think a lot of the time I spent coaching really influenced that. So helping people through the most challenging parts of their life. And I do truly love teaching. It's something that I find a lot of joy in. And I get to do that as a coach. And seeing that portion of my clients, not my clients, the clients I work with, and saying, hey, I have all this information that can help you. We just need to figure out how to apply it to your life. That's really exciting for me. But I also kept running into, especially working as a coach for barbell medicine, where people ask us more intense questions than I think some other coaches get. People would ask me questions. And I'm like, I don't have the answer for this. Like, I don't know how to help you. And that was always really frustrating for me, being like, I do not have enough information to help people the way I want to help them. And so for me, continuing education was, at for being a coach, was going to medical school, particularly for helping my female clients within pregnancy. Like, I don't know enough to help them, but I want to. I want to keep women lifting during pregnancy, and understanding the contraindications that I know exist and like can read in a paper, but knowing why we can't exercise with those, or knowing more about some of these things, is really important to me.
That's a really good point. Do you find it's tricky to balance like kind of the current age of information overload and just how easy it is for people to kind of go down the rabbit hole with certain aspects of training and life and all sorts of things, with the need to give pragmatic answers to things, right? Like, you get what I'm asking there? Like, there's like legit questions types of thing. Like, this is a legit concern we need to address, versus like, man, you just went and Googled a bunch of crap. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's really tough to empower people to ask questions and find their own answers. And I think a lot of people who are influencers or like work in the space want people to think critically. And to think critically, you have to do some of that research. But also knowing, and I talked about this on my Instagram the other day, like knowing who an expert is can be really hard. And knowing who to trust it's not so easy as just like, hey, this is how it is. And so yes, it's challenging, but how I will counsel people is I'll say, hey, I want you to bring me your questions. Bring me the thing that you looked up on the internet. I want to know. And then let's talk through it together. Obviously within coaching, I have that kind of time. Within medicine, less so, and that can be challenging.
That's really the big thing anymore, is that, you know, practitioners are going into rooms trying to deal with robust situations with limited time, right? And then we've also like painted this picture that kind of frustrates me, and it'll probably frustrate you as somebody who's going into medical practice. Like, you know, like, I'm a physical therapist. Like, the cool thing about the reason that I did, and like, there's a lot of reasons, I actually like started taking pre-medical requisites to go to physical therapy school. And then I had a professor be like, you should just go to medical school. Like, you know, go be an orthopod, like go make more money. And I'm like, all right, you know, but like, the cool thing is like, if you're doing your job well, you get to spend 45. If you're in a decent clinic, you get to spend 45 minutes with people. And like, you get like a little bit, and potentially return visits within a 2 week period. Right. Whereas like a medical practitioner, maybe, you know, you see somebody every 6 months, depending on what your specialty is, or once a year, right? If at all. And it's that time component. Whereas, like, that's what I love about coaching, and that's why I've built my business model around, like, that philosophy, is, like, I get to have a lot of little mini interactions with people, right? When it comes to, like, you just said, like, teaching. I mean, that's what a lot of this is, like, just being a good teacher. But, like, what are some of the things you lean on when it comes to like teaching people, like, you know, philosophy, practices, what does that look like for you?
I would say that I am actively in a spot in my life where I am learning how to teach better. And so I don't think that I'm the person to ask about it right now, because I'm in such a bit, like such a steep learning curve of how to teach. In a way that isn't condescending. And I don't think that I was condescending as a coach, but those people, it's like different, right? So I'm teaching in a very similar and at the same time different realm because I'm learning myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to balance all of that, I don't know if I have like some good ideas about it other than, you know, what I've heard Austin say and which I try and emulate of like, listen more and that kind of stuff. But like, I'm not positive that I have big overarching themes or tools that I use yet. I'm still in that learning process of how to figure out how to teach effectively. 'Cause I've taught college students, but that's a very different kind of teaching, and coaching is a very different kind of teaching than medicine.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have a good answer for you.
That's like totally fine. I think that's a really good point, is like, it's kind of almost like the attention that people, like when you're teaching college students, like the attention is like guaranteed on you, right? When somebody signs up to work with you as a coach, like, again, hopefully they look at it as a learning process. But yeah, you're right. Like, I guess the follow-up there is like, what is the challenge for like medical practitioners in like the setting to be like a teacher slash, I almost think there's just this expectation to be like, for people to come in, and I don't know if this is true, but like, hey, fix me, you know, fix me or manage all these problems, right? Versus like, how do you be a teacher when people come in, and like, how are you looking at that now as you're beginning like your medical school journey?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge I see right now is that for medical practitioners, it's a lot more challenging to know where someone's understanding is. So when people come to me as a coach, particularly within barbell medicine, we don't expect, but it's more common that people have an underlying understanding of training, right? So the like, we teach beginners 100%, but even those beginners have someone in their life who got them into the barbell medicine sphere. And so the level of understanding is much higher versus within, within medicine, people come in with understandings of the human body at all different levels.
Yeah.
And that's where it's hard. It's hard to figure out where you start teaching and where you're like, okay, you have this knowledge already. Engaging that in real time is really hard.
Yeah. It's a really good point. Very good point.
You probably experienced that with PT too, though.
Oh yeah. I mean, and there's also just navigating what people think they know, right? And like, that's, I'm not saying that in a condescending way. I kind of maybe am, but like, it's like people think they know, and you just see it. You see it so much with like influencers, right? Oh, like, oh, I'm moving poorly, or I shouldn't do that because of my age or this thing. And like, so much of it is like, I've really tried to get, like, I've been aware of motivational interviewing concepts. I've actually, like, I have the original book, like, I practice it, but like, I listened to a podcast with I can't remember his name, the guy who was one of the starting, like, you know, they made it, I think, is it Miller or something like that?
That's
but
Miller.
He did a podcast, and like, how they did like mock situations, and it was just like, dang, he is just so good at like letting somebody lead the conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's really the thing that I think makes the difference between like somebody who wants to be a mechanic and fix people and somebody who's just really good at like letting the person dictate where we're going and just being there to help them figure it out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the good ones can do it in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's
right?
The thing, right?
Yeah. Like, and I also think like that we also, you know, I've been a PT for 7 years, almost eight, I think 8 years, right? It's crazy how fast you lose track of time. And like, you know, I've been a coach in some capacity since I was like 21. And like, was I a very good coach? I pretty much just took pride in like not hurting people. Like, I'm just like, that was dumb. Like, let's not do that, right? Let's be smart and like, let's, you know, kind of play within our strengths. But yeah, so much of it now, I just ask so many more questions than I did even 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which is frustrating. I think I just have to suspend my ego and be like, let's just ask a question, because you don't, I don't know. I don't know all the pieces going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to, let's like, let's talk about training. I want to get into like training during med school, because like training's a big part of your life, and it's probably a big stress reliever. It's probably just something that you do to regulate. But like, what got you even into training? I think you played a sport. I think you were a soccer player. I don't know why I know that. I'm sorry, that's weird. But I think you
Oh,
played
it's so weird.
soccer.
Yeah,
I'm a soccer player, so like whenever I see soccer players, I identify that a little bit.
I mean, I've posted about soccer on my Instagram before. So, within the space of,
I just remember you have huge calves. I don't. Hopefully, that's not
you have
that
huge
like.
calves, but that's just genetic. I just got lucky.
Not from soccer.
No, I got those from my dad. I came out of the womb just all calf.
Jazz, massive
No,
calves.
baby, just calf. Yeah, I played soccer for 14 years from the time I was 4 to the time I went to college. And during that time, I also started picking up weightlifting a little bit to help my speed in soccer. Did it help at the time? No, because I didn't know what I was doing. And it wasn't like a speed-based program, which is fine. Once I got to college, I was like, man, I really don't want to join the team. I'm kind of done with this, but I am going to keep training. And so training was my stress reliever in college. And then by the time I got to my master's degree, one of my friends was like, hey, you have like some pretty good numbers. We should get you into a meet. And then I did a meet, and the rest is history. So I still love training. Now that I'm in medical school, it's a little bit different. So my schedule in medical school is I wake up at, I'm usually trying to start work by 8 a.m. So I start my day by doing a quiz for boards, or reviewing the quiz I did the day before for boards. And so that's what my goal is on Monday mornings, or like every morning. And then I go to class, which I have classes 2 or 3 times a week. And then I'm going over content, new content every day in the afternoons and reviewing. So my day starts, I try and do 8 to 5 consistently so that I can not have to, grind forever. But I'm pretty good about doing 8 to 5 every day. And then, but by the time I get home, I'm exhausted, because then I get home, I then have to coach. And I just don't really want to go to the gym. I know an 8 to 5 sounds pretty normal, but like I do my 8 to 5, I then coach, I then make dinner, and then I'm like, man, I need to study a little bit more before I go to bed. Like I need to shore some things up. And so it ends up that I'm studying 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
And so plus food, plus trying to do all this other stuff, I'm like, man, putting in the mental effort into training is really hard for me right now, particularly because of the comparison. So knowing that I used to be able to squat 420 pounds, and right now I'm like, man, a set of 10 with 225 is like pretty exhausting. It just doesn't feel very good, that comparison. And so there's some hesitancy there. And there's a lot going into this that my entire life changed in the last 2 years going into medical school. And my relationship with training has changed. And so it is still a part of my life. It's just a lot different. I train. Last week I made it to the gym twice and I went for a run. And so like that was a good week for me. And so it's just a big shift from training 2 hours a day, 4 days a week, plus cardio when I was in the height of training for school. Because I also have responsibilities for school that are not studying. Like I am the president of a club. I am running research projects. Like there's more than just the little things. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
What were your expectations going in?
I knew it would change. I also just didn't love training coming in. So I had competed at the last nationals right before I entered school. I don't remember when that was. It was probably around this time, so March or April, before I started school. And then I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get back into it during school. And I tried for a little bit to like keep up with it, and it just the drive to be in the gym isn't there. And I think that is a lot for a lot of different reasons, but I also just need something different right now, something that doesn't require my brain energy, which most people would argue that powerlifting doesn't require brain energy, but it's the needing to get up for it and to get excited for it. I don't have that right now. So,
Gotcha.
yeah.
Do you think, well, I think you mentioned something that's like, I am not that good at anything. So, like, as far as powerlifting, I've competed in powerlifting, nothing super impressive. I'm doing an Olympic lifting meet this weekend, which will be fun. But,
That's gonna be so fun.
yeah, I really have just tried to orient myself around having fun training, which, like, like when I was in PT school, there was still, I think what saved me is just like I was still coaching CrossFit, and I would just get on the bike. I would coach in the morning and I would coach in the evening, like, and it wasn't a crazy schedule. And also, like, PT school is challenging, but it's not, I don't think it's not medical school. But when I would go to the CrossFit gym, I would just hop on the bike for 20 minutes, and like that kept me moving. And but like, yeah, I have a 4 month old, no, 5 month old boy, and like so much of it, and I have the freedom. Like, I'm not studying and learning all day. I don't think people realize how taxing that is, like, mentally. And like, this is something I also want to talk to you about, just is because you posted on visualization, I think last week, which even you posting on Instagram during medical school probably is a feat. So that's something you should give yourself credit for. But I mean, like, a human is not like you're not a brain and then a body, right? Like, you are, like, mental energy is energy being expended, right? That is fatiguing. And like, yeah, powerlifting, being competitive, knowing what you're capable of, that's a big problem with injury too. Like, knowing that you are capable of X. And like, I ran sprints for like the first time, like last, it was probably early April, and
Are
I
your
tweaked my groin.
hamstrings still intact?
Yeah, like, my hamstrings, like, I'm not that powerful, so my hamstrings were fine, but I like tweaked my groin. And then I was actually like doing, I was my squat, and I was feeling pretty good like going into that, and I tweaked my adductor, and squatting pissed off my adductor, and I just kept squatting, like, and I just kept pissing it off. And then I finally was like, all right, you need to not do this. And I finally let it calm down. But that's kind of the nature of it. That's one of the hardest things, I think, for a lot of people, is like, you get to the certain level, and then when something goes awry, you try to either stay there or you try to get back there. And like, you almost just dig, it's like quicksand, right? I don't know if that's how you feel, or if that's part of it, or what your thoughts on that are.
So there's a lot that kind of goes into it for me. My priorities have changed in life. My priority is school now. My priority used to be coaching and powerlifting, but right now my priority is school and coaching. Like, I need to make a living and I need to learn enough so that I can continue to make a living. And so because my priorities have changed, I also just don't want to spend that kind of time in the gym anymore. I also, so we talked before the podcast started recording, but like when I started medical school, I moved across the country. So I moved away from all of my support system. I broke up with my long-term partner. I was in the depths of dealing with grief from losing my father and starting one of the hardest graduate level educations that one can start. And so, like, my life was focused on, okay, how do I make it to tomorrow?
Yeah.
And like struggling with a lot of depression. And so for me, training, I just couldn't care less at that point
Yeah.
because yes, it has given me so much, but in in the first semester of medical school, it wasn't serving me the same way that it had in the past. Just because as my priorities shifted, what was restful for me and what was rejuvenating for me was different. So yes, training used to be rejuvenating for me. Now it's like, it's another thing that I know I need to do. And I do feel better when I've done it. But being with my friends and connecting with people around me is actually what's more restful for me right now, even though, like, that's also part of my health. And yeah. So it's just been a big shift for me about what is actually important and how that changes kind of how I live my life.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Like, and it's not like really a this is one of the things. It's like, we really have no right to judge anybody on, well, there's some people you can judge on social media, but like the determinants of health, like being social, like having social relationships that are nourishing is something that I think a lot of people overlook. Right. Whereas like, it's probably, I mean, it is, it's like of the social determinants of health, isn't like the biggest one, like your social support system is like the thing that it's kind of hard to like narrow that out. Right. But of the one, like, it's pretty huge. Right.
It's a pretty big one. And I think it depends on the person. It depends on the circumstances. Like, there are 100% points in my life where I haven't needed my social support system as much, but in the last 2 years, year and a half, I have had to work really hard to be like, no, I need my social support system. That is what I need right now. I need to feel connected to humans. And I think it's also totally reasonable that a lot of my support system when I wasn't in medical school was my gym, and that's fine. I don't have that same connection here, and it's growing and building, but it's not as strong as it was there. And so I am also trying to find people outside of the gym and meet new people. And the place I live now is very different from where I have lived in the past. And adjusting to the culture here is interesting. And that means that my social support system has to be a little bit more robust as well. So,
yeah, I think that's one of the things that, like, when people listen to this, it's like, you can't, life is going to change. There are, like, one of the big things that people have as like an identity is like, I'm a lifter, and then like, well, like, shit's gonna change. Like, I hope that, and then I'm like, I'm very sure, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say that, I'm very sure, but I'm sure at some point you will get back to when it becomes a priority, when your life is not what it is right now, which is also very understandable. Right, that you will get in new training in some way, shape, or form and enjoy it again, right? But like, having the ability to switch identities or just be, you know, moldable and adaptable to life is like a really powerful thing, right? When it comes to, okay, so again, and like, you losing like your father, heavy, changing, drastic change. Like, I mean, I was very much depressed in 2020, especially the second half of 2020, obviously. We were away from family. Like, I have a very like obsessive mind. And so, like, you know, I was in clinics with masks on trying to help people. And like, I didn't understand grief. I was at the time a 30-year-old male who didn't really understand grief and emotions or any of these things. And I was feeling all these things and it sucked. Right. And, like, physical activity was something that I had always wanted to do. And I was frankly afraid to move like in a lot of ways, right? Because of what my body was feeling and stuff like that. And so I hope you know, find your spark for something when it comes back, or if that's in your cards, right? But go play soccer. Honestly, I'm playing soccer again. Yeah. So fun. Just don't pop a calf right away and don't get bleeded. But
I'm thinking about trying to join a team, but it's the time commitment of like, all right, in the town that I live in, there's nothing immediately close to me. I have to go to the next town over, which is not that far. It's like a 20-minute drive, a 20-minute drive there, 20-minute drive back, plus an hour game. Okay, so and then like settling back into whatever I'm doing, like I don't switch gears that quickly. That's 2 hours out of my week where I'm like already like, I don't know how much time I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Are
Versus
you?
like my workouts right now are less than an hour.
Yeah.
So
Are you second year or your first year?
I'm a first year.
Okay. What do you know what you want to go into specifically?
I have an idea. I am fully aware that my mind might change by the time I get to third year and do rotations. I am like all in loving anything OBGYN right now. We'll see if I love it when I'm actually doing it. But
Mm-hmm.
I love women's health. I also am interested in IM. I'm also interested in like some of those more like in-depth like medical medicine
Yeah.
instead of surgery, but we will see. I am questioning for sure.
Yeah.
So trying to
You
figure
have
it out.
time, and you have time, and yeah,
Yeah.
you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Talking to Austin, Austin's a very brilliant human being, but just he gave me a very, very good appreciation for internal medicine and the complexity, but also, he really also just leans on like good communication, and it's not that he's like they're still interacting with a human like we mentioned earlier. So, but yeah, it's a giant undertaking, and it's super cool. All right. When it comes to like public health, what does your profile say? I had your profile solved up here. Bridging the gap between health behavior and lifting. All right. So you don't necessarily have to hold yourself to that right now, but like public health, what are some of the things that like maybe frustrating narratives that like get your goat, quote unquote, that you see or that you hear, that you're going into medical school to maybe combat?
That health is our responsibility solely. So it really irks me. And this is something that I think is more prevalent in the US, but we as in a society, portray health as this personal responsibility, which I fully get. Health is a partially a personal responsibility. Yeah, you have to have some level of personal investment and time put into this part of your life. But also health is a public responsibility and a government responsibility. It is it's bigger than just us, and it's also partially luck. So it drives me crazy when people are like, oh, well, and I see this more from Instagram and less from medicine right now, but like social media is like, oh, you're not working hard enough, or you're not doing enough, or here's how to take that next step to improve your health. And I'm like, all right, this is a very individualistic take on health when health can also look like, I want to make sure that I'm living in a place, and this is again an individualistic way to say this, but like if you live in a place that has prioritized walking and the ability to get to where you want to go without a car, that's part of health too. And also, it's genetic luck of the draw of whether or not you're healthy. And that's really hard when I see people being like, oh, it's just personal responsibility. And I'm like, no, it's a lot more complicated than just, oh, you don't work out or you don't eat healthy. It's like, what systems have been put in place to help people actually improve these behaviors? And for a
Yeah.
lot of us, particularly in the US, they're not there the same way they are in other places, as in we don't have super walkable cities. We don't have great public transit. We don't have great conversations around healthy eating, and not from a like, you should only ever eat healthy or you should only ever eat salad, but like, what does a healthy relationship with food look like in you get to eat things that bring you joy, but also, how are we doing it in a way that's not damaging or
Yeah.
like only concerned with your body, right?
I mean, like it's again going back to like the mind and the body, right? Like we have this dualistic or dichotomized view of like, oh yeah, well if you just got your shit together, you'd be healthy, right? Or even like, what is healthy eating? Like, you know, I had some peanut M&Ms in a Fairlife chocolate milk on a drive yesterday, and it was delicious, and I was super happy. And within the totality of my nutrition for yesterday, it was totally fine, right? You know, am I saying to eat only peanut M&Ms? No, right? But like, there's all these factors that, yeah. I just finished, what's it called? It's called like Thinking in Systems. Have you ever heard of this book by like Donella Meadows? And it's just the complexity of any system is like way. It's just it's, things are so there's so many inputs, right? And then you kind of get into like the humans are a little bit of a black box when it comes to like we put all these inputs in and like. You know, I'm a pretty healthy dude. I could still have a stroke at 36 years old, like randomly, right? Which is scary as shit. I probably shouldn't have said that. Now I'm gonna be ruminating on it. But and then you still get outputs, and yeah, it's more like risk. It's kind of learning to play the numbers game, right? Like learning to place your bets in ways that you can, but also like there's a lot of people who are just kind of screwed based on where they're born, you know, the relationship that the people around them have with exercise and nutrition, what their government or their local community looks like, right? Like there's a lot of factors there. I think that's you hit the nail on the head as far as like the complexity of it. You know, like do we have to take personal responsibility for our actions? Yeah, but like also if you've never been exposed to a lot of this stuff, you don't know. And when you don't know, you can't really take action, right? So
And I think it's also, this is the thing that I run into the most, is people are like, I know I need to exercise. I don't know how. It's like most of us know we need to eat healthy. Like if you were to survey the entire United States, I would bet a good chunk of us would be like, I know I need to eat healthy. I know I need to exercise. I don't know how to do those things. And that education is really a lot more in depth than I think is given credit for by the general population. I think people who actually coach this kind of stuff recognize how complicated it can be. But for the large majority of people, it's not the same. So.
Okay, so like somebody comes to you and you know like there's this is one of those this is not a gotcha question, but like I want to get started exercising, right? Like never like let's say they are 40 years old, haven't been doing very much. Like what are the things that you ask and counsel them on?
The first thing I always ask is, what do you do for work? What are the responsibilities that have nothing to do with exercise that I would want to know about? So particularly for someone who's in their 40s, I'm asking, do you have kids? Do you have a partner? Do you have aging parents? Like, what are the things that you have to do outside of training that will keep you from training, right? So like, what makes training hard? And then because I also want to know like what they care about, right? And that helps me develop these systems that say, okay, this is what you care about. How can we also plan training to kind of like support that, right? For individuals who whoop, totally forgot my train of thought.
That happens.
So I'd ask that the question about what they do.
Fuck,
I'd ask
yeah.
about their previous training history. I'd ask who like what they think their goals are and what their goals are. And when I say what they think their goals are, a lot of people will give me goals that are either incredibly nebulous or way too specific. And so I just have to reframe them a little bit often. And we will come to the conclusion of like, hey, this is your big goal, but here's our next like little step, right? Or here's how we're gonna like work towards improving this. Yeah, those are the two big ones that I'm starting with.
I think I like the fact that you said you start with the right responsibilities that are like gonna make up 40, probably 50, 60 plus hours of their actual life, like first. I think a lot of people come to that like kind of after, right? Where it's like, you know, the old analogy of like, yeah, you got to put your big rocks, or you got to put your, what is it? Yeah, you got to put your big rocks in first, right? And so many, and like of coaching and all that stuff, it's like, well, let's throw in like a bunch of shit in the bottle first that is gonna make you feel unsuccessful, right? Or is going to be something that, like, there's so much to behavior change, and I want to talk about this a little bit too. There's so much to both behavior change and making change, and helping people like that. I think that, hey, well, let's start with like what can't really change that much. And that's like you're a parent of two kids and you work 40 hours a week doing these things and XYZ, right? That's really powerful. And I also just kind of also brings up the point that like health is complicated. Like if you sit at a desk 40 hours a week and you don't like your boss, like that's a stressor that needs to be navigated just as well as, you know, the stress of training, right?
And it also gives me the opportunity to ask people like, hey, sounds like you're kind of stressed. What does your sleep look like? And to dig into these like health behavior parts of a conversation without just being like, all right, sleep, tell me about your sleep. Okay, tell me about your eating patterns, which is just like so clinical and not interpersonal. And that's, it
It's
just
a
hurts.
checkbox. It's a box to be checked as opposed to a conversation that you're having, right?
And to be honest, you have to start there. You have to start with your check boxes because I used to do that. And I'm recognizing it now when I do clinical, like OSCEs and stuff. I'm like, I have a sheet of paper and I'm like checking off my boxes as I go because I can't remember it all yet. And so, yeah, you start there and then as you get better at it, you can just do it without thinking about it.
I mean, that's always the thing too. It's like in, you know, this like clinical evaluation that I would like what we were taught in school by one of our professors. It was like, 'cause you didn't know. Like you didn't know where to start and what to do and like how to think it through. And then like the more reps you get, the more you realize like, oh, I don't need to do all like, you know, all this stuff, right? And you can actually start to, there's like a tacit in, you know, knowledge that comes in, which is also tricky because that can also bite people in the ass, right? Where they think they know what they need to know and they don't dig deeper or anything like that, right? So what type of well, like, okay. That's what one of the, this is a little bit of a pivot, but just it's kind of not a giant pivot. Women versus men in like the exercise training sphere, right? You know, are women not just little men? And even that's like not a very great question because men are, you know what I mean by that, hopefully, because that's something that I've seen multiple times. You know, I coach women. The general things that I try to approach with are just with curiosity and asking questions and not really assuming anything. But what are some of the narratives that maybe you agree with or don't agree with? And then as a woman who's a coach and like navigating some of those things if they come up, what are your thoughts?
So I view women just the same as I view men, given the evidence that we have for training. I'm not going to write training any differently unless that person asks for different training. The biggest trend right now that I see is women training around their menstrual cycle. No matter how much I listen and I try and beat this over the head, it just doesn't die. And so there are no changes that need to be made for women on a broad spectrum around the menstrual cycle, for individuals and their unique experiences and symptoms. We can make changes, but training 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, basically, not the move. So periodizing that to your menstrual cycle is not the way to go. So I struggle because there is no difference in how we train men and women. There's no difference in response to training between men and women. But there is a consistent push for women to be seen as a unique population because I think we are human. Mm-hmm. Just as men want to be seen as special for different things, women want to be seen as special. And I think the hardest thing is trying to unteach that to people and be like, no, you're human first, your sex and or gender come second. And it's a hard
thing to accept, right? We all want to be special, right?
Sure. Yeah. We all want to be special and we all want to feel like we have that personalized training, mm-hmm. but instead of personalizing it to your sex or gender, let's personalize it to you.
Yeah.
And so I want to train people more broadly or more specific than gender, because we're all human. So like we'll all respond to training at the broad level, but yeah. when we're trying to titrate down to more specifics, there are less similarities between women than we think there are. And it's probably at that point, if you're trying to narrow down, let's just narrow down to the human or yeah. even a smaller population than human. Or, I mean, yeah. than woman.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. I think you said that like, well, it's like,
thanks. I'm going to now use it as an Instagram post.
Yeah. So. Because, but it's, but see, like, I get what you're saying. Cause it's like, it's kind of constantly what I'm playing around with is like, you don't like, good training, like me and you can look at something and be like, that's like a good training program, right? Like, and there's a lot of variation and maybe in the intention of what the person's goals are, specificity to their goals and XYZ, right? But like, you know, I look at some stuff that I actually just brought somebody on and it was like, I don't tweak a whole lot of stuff if they say this is what I want, right? But I'm trying to like let it evolve with where we've established where we're trying to go, right? And it really just comes down to like good training looks, you know, pretty similar. Like we got reps, sets, appropriate intensity, exercise selection, and, you know, specificity to some goal or not, right?
An auto-regulation of some kind.
Yeah, an auto, beautiful, like exactly, right? And then it's like, what do you like? Like, what are your preferences and where do you want to go? And if your preference is like, if you're a dude, like if you're a man and you work a really weird work schedule and every like third week, like you just feel like shit because of it, like that's probably going to be a week where we just do what you can and we kind of work around it. Same thing with if you're a woman who works a weird work schedule or you have really busy like parental life or XYZ, it just becomes like this game of actually coaching people and helping them make decisions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to make generalizations about sex and gender that don't really match the broadness of that group.
Mm-hmm.
So by saying all women should train this way, you are erasing the experience of any specific woman versus when we're talking about how we train humans, our generalizations for humans are very broad.
Yeah.
We say you need auto-regulation, you need variability, you need to be at a good intensity, and it needs to be relatively specific to your goals. But all of those things are in relation to the human itself, themselves, instead of being like, ah, we would do the same thing with other species as well, of like, these are the underpinnings of adaptation, yeah. not the underpinnings of humans, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Good response. It's marketing. Like what I go back to with so much of this shit is just, damn, like they figured out a marketing message that seems to either scare people or provoke like some response that gets them to buy XYZ, right? And gosh, it's a pain in the butt. All right, let's talk about visualization. And this is one of those big things that I took away from talking to Austin. And it's something that I've actually really, really started to practice. Because I read a book recently. I get to read a lot. Sorry, I know you probably don't get to read a lot right now.
I read every day.
Yeah, you get to read stuff that you're told to read, but maybe not so much.
No, I read for fun every day.
Oh, you do? Good.
What
do you
read right now?
What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading a fiction book. And it's just I get through like 2 pages a night and then I'm like
That's good. That's a good practice. Yeah. Fiction before bed is awesome. But it's which, neuroscience, it's was How Emotions Are Made by Lisa Feldman Barrett. And she just the brain is a prediction machine. And what I've realized is like the bane of my lifting existence is that most of the time I'm predicting that I'm gonna suck. Which is like I'm working out like through because my first experiences in the weight room were like I sucked at lifting. Like I didn't know how to move, didn't really have coaches. And so I've overcome that to some degree, but a lot of times it's still like just my brain getting in the way of this stuff, right? And
You
maybe
can just cut that out. You don't need your brain. Just,
that's
just
like,
open the skull, take it out, put the skull back on, and you're done.
Well, so much of it is like once you kind of understand the task, hopefully you got to get an understanding of the task and like you got to like know what you're doing, but then there's just this like positive visualization as opposed to like you probably help people. It's like you go to the bar scared. Like I can tell that people go to the bar scared, right? Maybe that's not where you're at, but like what are the points? What are some of the mental pieces of like lifting that you maybe help people with or that you think about?
A lot of them are how many times have you shown yourself that you have excellent capabilities and you can push it? And so it's not always saying, hey, I know you got this, like, I know you can do this, like. That external belief in someone is important, but it's more so about showing them all of the times they've succeeded. And so that's a big thing for me. And like creating a positive mentality, not in the way of like, I can do anything, but more so in the way of saying, hey, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to give it my best shot. I'm going to leave everything I have up there. And it's okay to be scared because it means I care. Or nervous. And those are the bigger things that I'm focusing on with lifters. And when we're doing visualization, the goal is truly to make sure that they have at least seen in their mind's eye a example of them succeeding.
I like that. Yeah, and the like it's that appropriate level of arousal, right? That I think is the tricky part for a lot of people, right? No, I love that. All right. Well, this has been super. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, always. This was super fun.
What? All right, you're telling 16-year-old Claire like what's your life lesson for, the younger version of you, and how does that maybe help other people?
Stop caring about what other people think of you.
Yeah, it's a good answer.
It does not matter what they think of you. Do things that make you happy. Stop trying to fit the mold that the world has told you is the right one. So, and I'm sure that will change again as like the most important thing that I would tell myself. But right now where I'm at, that's what I feel like is most important is like doesn't matter what other people think of you.
That's
This is
always
your
like
journey.
one of those ones that like when they ask people like at 90 years old, like that's always one of the big ones. And I wish I would have learned that earlier too, because I just was a super big people pleaser, worried about what other people thought going into it. And like when you just show up and like kind of execute your values type of thing, it's a huge one. And yeah, you just also it's a lot of energy to give a shit about what people are thinking of you all the time, right?
Yeah. And that's not to discount that people do think of that. Like that is at some points in time, you do need to worry about what people think of you. Like when I go on rotations, I will need to worry about what people think of me because they're literally grading me as a physician or as a future physician. But in the things that don't matter is not the right thing. But like in the experiences of like day-to-day things or like how you live your life, it doesn't matter. What you like doesn't matter what people think.
Yeah.
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 How
Yeah.
you dress. I used to be so worried about how I presented myself to the world. And now I present myself to the world in a way that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. We have a very short time on this earth, and man, it would suck to waste it by worrying about what other people think of you, especially if it makes you miserable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, have you ever read The Courage to Be Disliked? Have you ever heard of that book? It like changed. It was very helpful for me. And it's kind of like a dialogue back and forth between like a young student and like an old wise person. So it's kind of in story form, but so much of it is that, like, you know, there's always gonna be people that are critical of you no matter what you do, right? So you should there and but there will be people who, when you show up authentically, are going to like you, right? Or who are going to respect you, right? And that's one of my biggest things to, like, you know, probably the version of me that was just like starting in, like, I got a lot of reps. I was very fortunate. My dad told me to take a job as a nursing assistant, where I was like, so I was in the hospital and like I just got to interact with a lot of people. That helped a lot. But like the desire to like be a fixer or a pleaser, in the clinic, like, so if you're a young medical student or a young like practitioner, it's just be yourself and like care about the person that you're interacting with in the way that like you can, right? Like just be as kind of, that's kind of why kindness is like a mantra, because like kindness is just showing up and like trying to be kind of open, right? As opposed to just being nice, which sometimes people overdo, right? So yeah.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I am kind of passionate about the fixing idea. It is, and I think about this a lot as who I am as a person, wanting to be very good at what I do, wanting to help people. It is so incredibly asinine and egotistical to think that you are the person who is going to quote unquote fix someone. Get your head, excuse me for the
No, you
language,
can go.
but get your head out of your ass. Like, you are not that good. This problem that has been seen by 100 people is probably way more complicated than what you can do. And so do your best, give that person every ounce of your attention when you're with them. And that will be more powerful than being like, I'm the best, I can fix anything.
Yeah.
No. Be
Yeah.
a human being who listens and is
Yeah.
part of their community. So.
Gosh, now you just tapped me to like just egos in anything, but really egos in like healthcare or that type of stuff. Like, oh man, if we could
We
navigate
keep
that, then
going.
yeah, we can keep going. All right, all right. How are
Remember?
you? Do you see it? Do you see, like, I mean, maybe you're not quite there yet, but like, do you see it with
Yeah.
other people, like ego?
No, I'm not there yet. I see it more on the internet than I see it in
Yeah.
school. But like, you'll probably relate to this, but the ego of people who post on the internet and say, this is the one way to fix your back pain. I'm like, you are so full of yourself. Just because it worked for you doesn't mean you have found the secret. Like, and to think that you are like the pinnacle of understanding of back pain and you just fixed it, even form, pain,
Yeah.
nutrition, like you are not an all-knowing being on this shit. Particularly people who have no advanced education in these ideas, but for people even who do have advanced education, your humbleness of saying like, this is how we do it, this is what works for us, this is why. That's way better than just being like, I'm the best.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I really like Greg Lehman in a lot of ways, 'cause
He's
I
cool.
he great he's just like he's also just been, you know, he was a chiropractor and he had his, I think he had a master's in like, or he's got a graduate degree in like spine, this in the spine, right? Like, and he's like, yeah, we don't know. Like, and like that's what true experts often say, is like, we don't know the exact things for most of these things, but we do know like these things tend to help. There's also a lot of options for people, right? Do you anticipate, like, I mean, I'm glad you brought up the, do you anticipate the same struggles of, like, yeah, there's like the foreign police, right? And you know, working one-on-one in like a medical setting is probably a little bit different than venturing into TikTok or Instagram about, like, nobody's like really debating on TikTok. Well, the people kind of are, like, what we should do for this person's elevated A1C, right? Like, you what you need is cucumber juice or stuff like that. But do you imagine, like, well, let's go here. Do you think that, like, we're gonna, God, I don't want to go into politics at all, but, like, do you think we have the capacity to, like, actually help humans, or was it just gonna become a dumpster fire of just bullshit information over the next 50 years?
I believe in the tenacity of the human spirit and the human capacity. So I believe that regardless of the world we live in, humans will step up and be there for each other. I truly believe that. Sometimes it's very hard to see, and sometimes I have to work very hard to convince myself of that belief. But it is the belief that makes living my life the easiest. Within medicine, within training, I do believe that with time, we will change, we will pivot, we will shift into more positive ideals. I think it's actually on people who have higher education to be better at doing education in a fun way, in an exciting way, in a way that is not fear-mongering will always work, and we should not use fear-mongering. As educated professionals, no one should, but I can't really make judgments or recommendations on how other people live their lives. We should make sure that people are who are educated are also good science educators. And those are very different skills. And something that I'm incredibly grateful for that I've been able to learn in my life, that teaching within a very educated group is so much different than teaching science on a large scale. And I think people who are good at teaching an educated group, people who have advanced degrees, are often not taught how to, like we are taught in medical school, hey, you need to make your explanations in plain word form. How to do that is much more difficult than we give it credit for. And I've learned that through teaching on Instagram, right? Like I used to use a lot more vernacular, and now I'm like, all right, plain words it is. And it works way better. So
What is being on social media? What has it taught you, and then how has it stressed you out?
it's taught me how many times people need to hear the same information in order for it to click?
Super
It
good point.
takes forever. And that's partially because you have to undo a bunch of learning. And I think that's also the biggest challenge for me is like being patient in helping people unlearn old things. That's hard. It sucks. No one likes that.
I think that's the biggest stressor, is, yeah, like, you know, you it's almost like you just I like I don't know. I clear like the lens that I'm looking through, or what I actually know and have access to, is like very limited. I think that's why I just go back to, like, well, what I try to know is that optimism is usually a good strategy, but optimism does not mean you just do idiotic things, right? Optimism means, like, let's look at, like, where you really are, and let's take, like, small steps towards maybe a better position, right? Then it just, like, really, what being on social media has taught me is, like, what is going to get a lot of attention, is not always what you should be putting out. You know, like, and that's a tricky game when, you know, I run my own business, I love what I do, and I want people to follow me, and I want people to work with me. But, like, at the end of the day, I gotta lay my head down on my pillow and feel good about what I'm doing. And if I'm like scaring the shit out of people to try to get them to follow my method or XYZ, like I just can't vibe with that. And I don't even know if the people who kind of do that think that they're doing that. I almost think sometimes they just freaking, this is what they know and they have, this is what they've been taught and this is what has seemed to work, right? And they're just not aware of it, but it's really frustrating. So
I actually, so back to my belief in human spirit and tenacity and character, I believe those people actually believe they're helping.
Yeah.
I do not believe that they think they're fear mongering. And if you were to tell them that, they would be horrified. They would never want that.
Yeah.
But I truly believe in the goodness of humans and the goodness of people. And I truly believe that people are trying to help each other. The problem is we are sometimes the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
And this is why I think it's so hard for people to recognize, like, hey, knowing who is a good resource is hard. It is hard to know because there are so many people who weaponize their knowledge or their credentials. And there are so many people who are absolutely brilliant who don't have credentials. And so, yeah, you need to have a good base of things that are important. So,
yeah. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit because I think when people get paid for what they're doing, they're like, all right, they start closing off their, or they start putting their blinders off. I do believe I'm with you 100%. I think people in general want to do good and want to help others, but like, it's also just being in a couple of shitty clinics where it's like, this is not helping people. This is no bueno. Right. And like, they just, it's like, it's hard, but I'm with you. I think the audacity.
Go ahead. Also know that I am a little bit toxically optimistic.
Yeah.
Because it's the only, and that's not that I'm going to push that on other people.
Yeah.
It's how I have to think about the world in order to not be like, oh my God, why is it like this?
Yeah. No. So well, I think you're actively stepping into something that you are going to over the course of your career. Like your career is going to be hard. Like I hope it's going to be really rewarding and I hope you get out of it many things and a sense of purpose and all that jazz. Right. That's like the point. Right. But like, you're also, this is like, in my opinion, like an act of defiance against like the shit of life. Right. Like I want to help other people keep, which is also really freaking hard. Like we've touched on this numerous times in various forms, but like life is not black or white. You know, it's like, we're all going to die. We all are here for a short
time. That is actually black and white.
Yeah, that is black and white. Like, but the good point.
Something, death and taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Those things are black and white. But like how we choose to embark on like the journey of life is something that usually requires us to like, you know, understand both things. Like people get very afraid of the fact that they're going to die. And it's like, well, you got to almost accept that. Because when you kind of accept that, you actually start to like live a little bit, right? And which can be tricky, but all right, this is a true last question, then I will let you go. I know you need to go, and but I appreciate you sticking on, and you brought up some good stuff. Influences. Who are some of your biggest influences? Who are people that you really respect or that people should follow? And what are some of those?
Man, the list is too long to actually list it, but anyone who works for BBM, obviously. Alyssa Olenek is amazing. She's fighting the good fight. There's so many good practitioners out there who are doing the good stuff. I am admittedly less involved in sports and physical therapy or training stuff right now on social media. So I'm following people who are like OBGYNs and physicians and learning from them right now. So maybe less obvious, but people like Jen Gunter, she's amazing. Period of the Period is really good for women's health stuff. Who's also connected with Alyssa. And then Mama Dr. Jones is great. So I follow a lot of women in health right now.
I think my wife.
I'm missing a big one who I can't pull out of my brain.
Mama Dr. Jones sounds really familiar.
Super. Who's the OBGYN who works? Gosh, I can see her face and I can't come up with her name. That's fine. So that's who I'm listening to a lot.
I love it.
I also stay off of social media as much as
Social
I can.
media is brain rot. It's like,
It's just, I just don't have time. Like, I unfollowed half the people I used to follow on my work account because I just can't have the input.
yeah.
But then in my personal life, people who I'm looking up to a lot right now, I look up to my dad, even though he's not here. Like, I think about him a lot. And then I look up to Jordan Austin and Lorraine and Leah. Like, those are the people who I'm really like looking for their advice and their help and their support as I'm like navigating some of this stuff, just because they are where I want to be in multiple different ways. And so they're super great and helpful. So, and I'm very lucky to have them as mentors.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. I
Thank
really
you.
appreciated chatting with you. And yeah, where can people find you?
The most easiest place to find me, the easiest way to reach me, is through Instagram, at Claire_BarbellMedicine, or you can email me, at Claire@BarbellMedicine.com.
Yes, I think that I'll confirm that because I sent you an e. Yes, that's correct. So yeah, I love it. Well, good luck with the rest of your studies.
Thank you.
Take it day by day, hang in there, do your
Thank
best. I'm sure you will. But I appreciate
Yes.
your time and yeah, this will be up soon. And
That's great.
yeah, have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Peace.